Welcome to Fearless Founders, an interview-based podcast that highlights founders and their highs and lows as entrepreneurs, hosted by the Midland Institute of Entrepreneurship. My name is Alexis Teichmiller, founder of Deeper Life, a coaching and consulting company, as well as the host of the Deeper Life podcast. I'll be your co-host for this season.
Hi, I'm Austin Brooks, executive director of the Midland Institute for Entrepreneurship, who is the nationwide provider of CEO. We are on the forefront of leading communities to bringing the next generation of entrepreneurs to be part of your local entrepreneurial ecosystem. Let's jump in.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Fearless Founders. It's me, Alexis.
And Austin.
And we are really excited about introing today's episode with Brandon Nguyen. This is a high energy episode.
Yes, absolutely. I actually, you know, since we recorded this live with our CEO students all over the country, I actually re-listened to it this morning and holy cow, I'm having a better day. Let me tell you. So if you're tuning into this, don't tune out. What I will say is if you're having a down day or an off week, this is the episode for you because the mindset that Brandon gets into challenging all of us on, it's contagious. It's made my day better.
Yeah, the high energy in this episode is real. And I'm going to share a full bio inside the interview itself, but just to give you a little bit of insight, Brandon Nguyen is the most decorated American gymnast on the rings in the United States history in artistic gymnastics. So just thinking about the discipline and the work ethic it takes to achieve at such a high level, that's one of the things he digs into, not just in his athletic career, but also as an entrepreneur, just the discipline that it takes to really unlock that next level.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's so interesting for, you know, no matter what age you are tuning in today, is there's different mindsets that we get in and we can get stuck. And so he throws a really cool challenge out around scarcity and abundance mindset. And what I like about it so much is, you know, I'm tuning in as the executive director of Midland Institute, who's here for the students. But deep down, I'm like, wow, I needed this. Yeah. I needed this challenge. I mean, I was able to confront some of my own limiting beliefs mm-hmm. and realizing that living in that abundance, how much more you can do, especially if you care for yourself. And so what's so amazing for any young entrepreneur, wherever you're at on your journey, that entrepreneurial mindset can directly be tied to having this abundance thinking in your life. So you did a great job. The questions, by the way, great work. I'm curious, what was your favorite moment of this interview?
I think my favorite moment was, you know, he walks through going back to the Olympic trials and trying out, and he walks through the dedication and the sacrifices that he had to make it happen. And I think for me personally, it was looking at my own life and my own creative journey as an entrepreneur and as a founder, figuring out like, okay, I need to reevaluate some of the sacrifices that I need to make or some of the distractions that I let kind of get me off course. That was a big wake-up call during this interview of, okay, I need to reevaluate some things that kind of, I have shiny object syndrome, you know? So it's like, getting and staying focused and taking that action.
And I think the other thing I'm so appreciative of is just the humility that Brandon has to talk about successes and failures. What I really valued was, you know, I don't know if any of you out there are like me when I watch the Olympics, it's like, wow, look how awesome they are now. But where does an Olympian start?
Right.
So to hear that journey where he goes from being like a 7-8-year-old kid who's just bouncing off the walls, climbing all over the couch, and his mother, his amazing mother saying, let's use this energy and see if we can harness this into maybe he could just do gymnastics. We'll see if he even likes it. To then him finding a dedication in himself at a young age and becoming the man he is today. So that's, you know, that origin story. Like, I hope you enjoy. This is a good one.
Yeah, I agree. So you'll hear a lot about his journey as an athlete in, you know, USA Gymnastics, and as well as, you know, how he's grown his own real estate investment company and how he's translated the skills he learned as an athlete into business. And that connection is really powerful. So this is one you will not want to miss. Let's dive in.
Enjoy.
I'm really, really excited to be this year's host of Fearless Founders. And the most beautiful element of this is like the one time every month that all the CEO students all across the country get together in one place. And that is pretty magical to me. So yes, a part of my network is Brandon Nguyen. And Brandon and I met actually about 5 years ago at a conference. And it just goes to share, when you meet people, you never know the friendship or the businesses that you might create together. And so I'm really excited to introduce Brandon to you. He has a very long bio that I could read, and we'll get into that later, but I've really condensed it down. So Brandon Wynn is the most decorated American gymnast on the rings in the United States history as an artistic gymnast. He is a 4-year teammate appointed national team captain and 6-time USA rings champion. He graduated from Ohio State in 2011 and moved into the United States Olympic Training Center in Colorado, where he trained and went to school for his master's degree. Since retiring from gymnastics, Brandon has focused aggressively on his entrepreneurial career. And after attaining his master's in business administration, he has founded multiple companies and has successfully built a real estate portfolio worth millions of dollars. And he is 32 years old. So hello, Brandon, and welcome to Fearless Founders.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. That was a great intro. Yeah, I'm sure it's awkward when someone talks about all the things that you've accomplished, but you've accomplished
right? You're
a
like,
lot.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, I did do that. Well, I'm really excited to dig in. And I think what's really relevant to where the students are right now is your origin story, right? Mm-hmm. Where did you come from? And my first question, which has nothing to do with business, but has a lot to do with business at the same time, mm-hmm. is what was your childhood like?
Yeah, my childhood was very interesting. So training with the goal of becoming an elite athlete, it was really nice to have that as my origin, as my number one goal. I think starting at the age of 8 or 9, I already knew that was my number one focus. But along with that, in elite athletics, you have college athletics, which is really the infrastructure and the system that breeds top level performance. So along with the goal of being an elite athlete, I knew being at a D1, very competitive school with all the modalities that would help me do that was going to be very important. So as a young one, I was already by the age of 9 training 5 or 6 days a week and 3 hours a day. And I was really just enjoying that process. The interesting thing though, and I think a lot of us can share in this, is that that sounds pretty intense at that age, but I was enjoying it and I was having fun. I don't recall like a single moment that it felt stressful in any way. And although that seemed intense, it was really enjoyable. It was a family thing. We all got to travel to my competitions starting at 9. And by the age of 13, I made the decision to just focus on gymnastics and start doing homeschooling at that time. So that was the really early years of getting focused.
And what led you into gymnastics? Because 8 or 9, I mean, I am not thinking about what I want to do with the rest of my life at 8 years old.
Yeah, naturally, from what I hear, I don't remember too much, but I just had a ridiculous amount of energy. My parents were like, if I don't put this guy in something, he is going to tear this house apart, right? So it's like, I was jumping off the couches and just running around crazy. I did a lot of sports. Gymnastics was the one that stuck. I found it really, really appealing because it was really easy. It was actually something that I could really sink my teeth into. And it was really easy to have a lot of different experiences in training. So yeah, they were like, let's get this guy in something that's going to be intense.
Yeah. And then the decision to go into being homeschooled, right? Because a lot of the students that are in this class are, you know, in traditional high school systems. And I'm curious, what was that like making that decision to be homeschooled versus a traditional path? This question is also, there is no traditional path.
Right.
And so you kind of debunked that at a really young age of my path is my path, not my path is whatever society or school tells me that it should be. So I'm curious, kind of at 13, 14 years old, what led you to that decision of I'm actually going to carve my own path and be homeschooled so I can focus on training?
Yeah, great point. So I think that our paths is really knowing ourselves and then having the confidence to step into who we really are. That's the biggest thing. So I think I could feel that really early on at 13. I was like, well, I really feel aligned with trying to carve my own path. And I really feel aligned with sinking my teeth into training. And I knew that if I could just get 2 trainings in a day at that point and I could do school in between, it'd be really helpful. So it was challenging logistically for sure, right? Because we had to sit down and come up with a program on how we're going to get all of my college classes done. So I was taking county college at that time and a high school program. So I'd get my high school diploma and then also be able to walk into college with completed college credits so I could lighten my load during college so I could train. So by the time I got to college as a freshman, I was really a sophomore because I already had completed enough college courses to be a sophomore. So then I could just go really slow in college so I could train a lot. But again, I think it really comes back to just sitting with yourself and saying like, who do I feel like I am, right? And then having the confidence to step into it, because there was a lot of criticism for me and my mom, who was the person helping me operate and execute who I was.
So I want to dig into that criticism, if you don't mind.
Let's do it.
I think that when you are young and you start a business or you're different or you have different ideas and you don't necessarily fall in line or you're doing something different and people are going to have thoughts about that. How did you manage that? And how did you navigate not letting that negativity or not let that criticism get in the way of your dream?
Yeah, it's a tricky path, right? So first, when somebody criticizes us for trying to do what we feel we need to do, it's hurtful. And then we also second guess what we're doing. But then there's also the other side of the spectrum where we could be overly aggressive about responding in a way that could be almost abrasive because we feel offended, right? So it's really about sinking into who you are. It's challenging. And a lot of the criticisms that we got were that my mom was allowing me to do what I wanted to do too early and I didn't know what I wanted to do. But her whole goal was to allow my natural energy and my natural path to be liberated as early as possible. And she knew that if she could get me stepping into myself and liberating that energy as early as possible, that if I was to take that through for the rest of my life, that it would be really valuable. And if we were to boil all of this down to one thing, which is, you know, creating success, I think that'd be boiling it down to saying it's knowing who you are and having the confidence to be that as quickly as possible. Because in the end of the day, we're going to get there, right? Like we're really going to live a life based on our preferences. And when we can do that early, we start to really cut out a life that we'll enjoy. So the criticisms were thick. They were from everybody. Everybody in our family was criticizing my mom and myself. Mm-hmm. So it was really hard. But she was like, nope, this is the path. He feels it. I feel it. And we're going to go for it.
That's powerful. One, to have someone in your corner who was supporting you through that different path, but then also you at such a young age, knowing yourself, being confident enough to speak up for what you wanted. So you made this decision to be homeschooled. A lot of these students are 18 years old. Who were you at 17? Like, where were you mentally and kind of where were you in the terms of your mindset?
My mindset was following the thing that I wanted to do as much as possible, but I was not very, I wasn't sitting down and thinking and being really conscious about those choices as far as being calculated. So that was a really big thing that I think actually helped me early on. It wasn't necessarily about like, well, we have to homeschool because if we homeschool, then we can create this opportunity and all of that. It was more just following the flow. So my mindset was like, how do I follow the fun here? How do I follow the thing that I naturally gravitate towards? I think that's a really important thing early on because that's what we all end up getting exceptional at. Right? Like, Alexis, I know you feel this. It's like the older we get, we're just getting closer to the thing we were supposed to do anyways. And that's all we're really doing. It's like figuring out like, what are we supposed to do? So that was my mindset at the time. I was like, you know, I don't really know how this all goes. We got all this criticism, but this is pulling me in this way because it seems like fun. So let me just follow that. And I won't overthink it.
And that's also, there's a difference between something that's happening and unfolding organically versus something that's happening because you're forcing it to happen.
Yes.
And I think that's a really big part here as, you know, you're making decisions in your business and students, as you're figuring out your senior year, where you're going to go to college. I do think that there is an element of what is unfolding naturally to me and what is feeling really forced, because there's going to be that tension and there's going to be those elements of this actually doesn't feel like my path. This feels like something else. So I think that's a big part of your story too.
That's a huge, huge point. And the way that I look at it now, and now when I look back at my life and I recall it, that is it. So it's sitting with yourself and feeling what's supposed to unfold naturally, and then applying focused action in that path. and then zooming back out and sitting with yourself, where am I supposed to go naturally? And then applying focused action. I do think there's an overemphasis, and I say this carefully, but I do think there's an overemphasis on grind and hard work if you do it blindly. Hard work is incredible if it's in the direction in which is aligned with you. If it's not, it doesn't work. So at this point in my life, it's all about trying to hear the true voice. When I'm facing resistance, am I facing resistance because this is truly not aligned? Or is this a moment that I do need to buckle down and push through? That's really all I'm doing in my life at this point. I recall that's all I was doing back then as well. It's what's the true voice? How do we hear the true voice of our alignment? And how we do that is we settle down, we bring the energy back down, we let go of the criticisms, we let go of the expectations, we let go of all the things, and we try to feel what's aligned with us. That's the whole game for sure.
Yeah, that's big. So through the mindset, I'm curious, what were some of your biggest fears? Like, we've talked about things that went well. We talked about the criticism, but like internally, what were some of your biggest fears as you were on this path at becoming very successful in your craft at a very young age?
Thinking back about them, I don't know if I really felt them a lot at the time. They were going on subconsciously for sure. But I think it's really often to be able to articulate and materialize what's going on internally at such a young age. But looking back, it was, wow, we've got all this set up. Can I actually do this? It's like, oh, a lot of sacrifices have been made. Can I actually do this? I started to feel the pressure creep in pretty early. And at that point, it really became a game of monitoring that pressure and being able to funnel that. But yeah, it was definitely a fear. Can I execute on all the things that we put in place? There's a lot of hype now. As you start to gain momentum, people get on your side and a lot of hype kind of gets around you. And it's like, can I live up to what I said I was going to do? Those fears are pretty significant, but the way that I got through them, and it's the same way I get through them today. It's like, whatever happens, happens. And we're going to go on this ride and it's all going to be a journey. and we're going to see how this thing unfolds. And it's almost comical. And still today, I kind of laugh because I'm like, we're going to see how this whole thing goes down. And it was like that back then as well. But the thing that became really reassuring for me, and as we all get older, and as a lot of you guys start to get older and meet some more successful people, and Alexis, I think of me, we may have talked about this once or twice. When you meet these people that have done these incredible things, you're like always looking for this little nugget. Like, what is this amazing thing that they have that I don't have, right? When you think that you might be incapable. And the truth is that there's really nothing there, in the sense that the majority of the time it's alignment and execution. As long as we work hard, anybody can really do anything, I truly believe. So when I started to see that unfold and I started to meet these other like super successful athletes, I'm like, huh, you eat food just like me. Like, you wake up and your hair is messed up just like me, you know, and you start to realize that everybody's human. I started to really gain some confidence. Like, I could be one of these people. And then I was able to execute on that.
Right. And sometimes we get in this mindset of, well, in order for me to get there, I need to do all these things and then I can be happy, or then I can be fulfilled, or then I can feel like I'm successful. And we kind of place this power in other people of, well, they're successful. I could never, we look at all the reasons why we could never be like them, or we kind of idolize them in a way that's like, they're that way because of this. Yeah. Instead of realizing that they're also literally just human beings. And when you can kind of lower that pressure and lower the stakes a little bit, it kind of takes that pressure off of, okay, well, what's accessible for me now? Now that I'm not focused on someone else's path, what's accessible for me?
Exactly. And when we get stuck in that mode of like, well, they have this and I don't, we just have to remember that is our perception of what they have. It's not what they actually have. They might feel they don't have that at all. It's just our perception. And those perceptions and those lines are really built by our biggest insecurities. It's so true what you just said. And it's like, I know you've seen it, but it's just such the point. And I love getting this constant reinforcement that this is the case in life.
Yeah. So we've kind of talked about the origin story. You as a youngling.
A youngling.
So I'm curious now. I want to shift into this conversation around mindset, around discipline it took, around the mental shifts that were happening. So you were an elite gymnast, and the interesting thing about a gymnastics career is it can be a solo career and it can be a team career.
Correct.
And so as we shift from being solo entrepreneurs to working in teams or working in groups, I'm curious, what was the mindset shift of, okay, I'm an elite gymnast and now I'm a team captain?
Yes.
And the team mindset that came into play there.
Yeah. The way that I lead today still in the way that I led is by being the ultimate example. I think that works in teams. And I also think it works with how we get in life. And you mentioned this 2 minutes ago or so, that when you want to get something, you think you have to like do all these things. And then once I do that and I get there, I'll be happy. But really the way that I see this is that you become it today. So you start playing the character of who you want to be today, and then everything auto-corrects around you. And that's how I led. I never like went out to be a leader, and I was never like, oh, hopefully I get elected as team captain. And at Ohio State, I got elected as team captain as a junior, which is usually not the case. Usually only a senior is a team captain, but it was the same thing. I just focused on being the individual that was the example. And then that's how I led. And I always say this, and I think it's such an important point. It comes up in my life every single day still today. And in these conversations with my friends, everybody else, you can help people the best from the overflow of your cup, but not by pouring out your cup. It is such a tricky thing, selfishness, all of these things, but you need to be the example. And by exuding who you are and those principles, you get everybody around you to autocorrect and fall in line as a leader. And that's the way I still lead today. And I've done that since junior year of college.
Mm. So what I'm hearing is scarcity versus abundance. Just to kind of walk through that, y'all, scarcity, I don't have enough. I'm not enough. I'm pouring from emptiness. I don't have enough to give, but I'm still pouring out and I'm exhausted and I'm overwhelmed. Abundance is I am enough. I have enough. I'm taking care of myself so that when I pour out or when people are getting from my energy or from my overflow, I have this abundant mindset where things will just kind of figure themselves out instead of always being scared that I'm not going to have enough. And so I'm curious, like, what role that scarcity mindset of I'm not going to have enough or I'm not going to be enough versus this abundant mindset plays into that leadership role?
Yeah, you've really kind of articulated exactly what that is. That abundant mindset is an energy generating mindset. It's a mindset where And I really want everybody to understand what the abundant mindset is. The abundant mindset is rooted in neutrality and curiosity. And I can't wait to see how this unfolds. And I have everything I need now. And as I'm approaching the rest of my life, I'm doing it because it's a beautiful example, not because I need it to feel whole. That entire mindset is a mindset that will fuel you infinitely for anything you ever want to do. The second you get into that scarcity mindset and it's like, well, if I don't do this and get this, I'll never feel like I've completed what I was capable of. The second you get into that mindset, it is a depleting mindset that is going to drain your energy and you will hit zero. So the reason why I found naturally early on that I needed to be in that abundant mindset, and now very conscious that I need to be in abundant mindset, I know you know this as well, is that that is the only way to have the energy to achieve big things in life. It's the only way. We've seen it in ourselves, Alexis, and I know we've seen it in others, that when you have a scarcity mindset, you can come out swinging, you can have a chip on your shoulder, but you never last to the end and you never really get all the way through. So I learned early on I needed that. And today, all I do is set my energy up to be an abundant mindset and then ride that abundant energy in my daily tasks. The second I slip into scarcity, I stop what I'm doing and I recalibrate because there's no way you can do it. And just in the last piece of this, we all know that actions don't necessarily directly equal results immediately. Right. There's a time horizon. And when you are taking actions from an abundant mindset, they're so much more potent. They're so much more directed. Your success rate in those actions from an abundant mindset is so much higher than from the scarcity mindset. You could be hitting these actions in a scarcity mindset constantly and still not get the results. So I think this could be the single most functional thing that I've gotten my hands around at this stage in my life. But I was doing that subconsciously back then.
And I want to like really zero in on, you said if I'm starting my day and I'm working from this abundant energy and then I slip into a scarcity mindset, that is a part of the process, right? It's where we're aware that I am bringing this negative energy into my business or into my life. What is that switch, that flip of a switch? What does that look like for you? And how can you tell that you've shifted from this abundance into this scarcity?
The switch is, instead of doing things because it would be cool to do it and exciting to do it, I'm doing it so this thing doesn't happen, something that I'm scared of. Ah. It's so obvious when it happens. But for me, like I won't see it for 30 minutes or an hour, but all of a sudden I'll start taking actions to prevent something I don't want instead of taking actions to promote something that I do want. It's the opposite thing, but the actions look very similar. So yeah, that's how I noticed that. And it's like, okay, let's like get down to the root of this. Like, what's truly going on? Well, I'm scared that if I don't complete this, that I'm not going to be okay, or whatever it is. And then I just flip that switch, wash that energy out, and get back into, this is all a cool ride and icing on the cake.
Yeah, this is good, y'all. I like the tangible elements of that. I'm curious, throughout your gymnastics career, how you managed stress and insecurities and doubt and comparison, because you have stood alongside of some amazing gymnasts, some Olympians. And I'm curious how those insecurities, those doubts, they either fueled you or they took away from you, and just the role that comparison played in that.
Yeah, I definitely thought they were probably fueling me, but they ultimately definitely took away. If I could try to articulate it now, I definitely had those experiences, those insecurities, those doubts. But if I could take away from it now, we all have a very unique skill set. Our ability to be ourselves, nobody can be me better than me. Nobody can be you better than you, right? So when you take that your unique skill set, you put the right environment on top of it, and you contribute the right energy as the elixir, you could be ultimately powerful. When we compare ourselves, like from these like tangible outcomes and all these other things, we're looking at all of these broad variables. All we need to focus on is, how do I become the ultimate example of me? How do I put the lens of the perfect environment that suits that on top of that? And then how do I bring the right energy to be the elixir? If we can do that and execute that at a really high level, we're infinitely powerful and unstoppable as an individual. When we all compare and then we try to align and become something because we're comparing like somebody else, we're stripping ourselves of our individual power. The way that we become most powerful is becoming the ultimate example of who we are individually. Doesn't that make sense if we really think about it, right? Yeah. Like, really becoming who we are individually is the best way to be powerful. And if we strip ourselves of all those things, we don't. So I always knew that. I said, okay, maybe this guy can do this and I can't do this, but my power, and as I continue to release and understand who I am, mixed with the right environment, I could be successful in this area and come over the top and still be able to create a result that I'm interested in. So we all always have that power.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I just want to zero in on the environment. You know, you've mentioned that a couple of times. And whenever I was going through CEO, I felt in a way that I was finally home, because I was in an environment with other students my age who were interested in doing something different, who were interested in entrepreneurship, who were interested in trying new things. And there was an element of that that made me feel safe to try new things.
Yeah.
Environment plays a really big role in our ability to step forward and take action, or our ability to act out of fear or act out of comparison or insecurities. So I'm curious, the mental strength, and the reason that we're talking a lot about mindset, y'all, is because we can sometimes think that business is just business and it's separate from our personal life, or it's separate from our mental state or our mental strength. And they're very much connected. Like, I would love for you to talk about the mental strength and abilities and skills that you've carried through, that you learned from gymnastics, how that relates to your business, you know, because they're very, very connected.
Yes. So the thing that comes to me first is, it's never over till it's over. And you always see it through to the very, very last second. And you never know. In gymnastics, if you have a goal of making an Olympic team, I'll tell you a story about my teammate that just made the Olympic team this last go around. He was, so we have a Winter Nationals in February. He competed at the Winter Nationals. He got first place on his event that he's trying to make it the Olympics in. And they took the guy on the national team that got second place over him. They said they didn't like him. He didn't have the look. He got first place. I don't get it. Right.
Wow. So
it was insane. That had happened to him like two times. When I say the look, that's a term that we use in gymnastics, but you know, sometimes your gymnastics doesn't look a certain way that's world class or whatever it was. There was just such overwhelming evidence. He would never get selected. He would never get selected. Then he went to the US Championships 2 weeks before Olympic trials, which is 1 week before the actual Olympic Games. Went to US Championships, did an exceptional routine, got underscored. They still like the other guy better. And everybody's just telling this guy, like, you're never going to make it. You're never going to make it. And they go to Olympic trials and it's him and the other guy that they clearly want to put on the Olympic team. They clearly don't want to put him there. He may have even been feeling like, why am I here? And at that last second, the guy's about to go, he goes, the guy they like, and he messes up. And then everybody goes, oh, he messed up. And 120 seconds later, this guy's going to go. Now, for the past year, everybody's like, he's not the guy. They don't like him. He goes and he doesn't mess up. 30 seconds after that happens, the whole world's like, oh, he's the guy now. That was it. And then he made it. He went to the Olympics. Like for an entire year, he had started embodying this feeling that he wasn't the guy. The whole world, the whole narrative, all of the media, he's not the guy. All he did is he just stayed focused and saw it through to the very end. And he stayed in the game and things unfolded for him. So the ultimate lesson that I'm learning that I took from gymnastics to business is you just stay in the game to the end. You keep showing up with good energy. You keep being aligned. You keep treating people right. You keep doing the work. You stay in it to the end and you see what happens. And often you'll outlast people and end up accomplishing that goal. When I was 7, I started with a group of like 40 athletes and I became more successful than everybody else I started with in my sport. I always like say this and everybody laughs. Like, well, how did you like beat all those athletes you started with? I'm like, I'm literally the only one that didn't quit. That's it. They all quit. So I won. So that's the answer, right? Like maybe they would have beat me. I don't know, but they quit and they started doing other things. So the point is you stay in the game to the end. And that's the lesson that I always take through. And people will look infinitely powerful in competition, but it's whoever keeps their composure and just has this infinite source of energy that's staying into the end. They want to see it through. That was the number one lesson I took.
Wow. And okay. When do you know when to quit though?
Good point.
Because if
so
we
again,
never quit, then we keep doing things forever and ever and ever. Right. So when do you know when to quit? When's the right time? And I'm curious because this is a great transition, honestly, from, and I do kind of want to, if you're okay with sharing, I want to talk about you going
everything.
Back in to
God,
gymnastics. So, okay, let's just really quickly, we left gymnastics, like walk me through that really quick. And then your decision to jump back in for this Olympic trials.
Yes. Okay. Very cool. So I left gymnastics in 2016, immediately jumped. So I had been investing in real estate, like very, very passively prior to that, but immediately jumped into entrepreneurship. Met you then, started building fitness businesses and doing a couple different ventures and ultimately more real estate investing. That was 16. Did not go upside down for like 4 years, all the way up until 2020. And then basically right before they pushed the Olympics back due to COVID, my coach had called me. He was like, listen, there's this like plus one Olympic spot. And there's really not that many guys that are in high contention for that spot. Do you want to try to make a comeback and come back into the sport? I'm like, I haven't been upside down in 4 years. And I was telling him
physically, upside down. Yeah.
I haven't tipped that way in 4 years, man. I was like, I'm a normal, normal person guy now, like everything physically. And he was like, yeah, like just try. So I decided to come back to the sport and try to make this Olympic team in 2020, because like you said, typically I was an event specialist on the rings. When you're an event specialist to compete in a team event in the Olympics, it's very hard to do because you need to have value on multiple events. So for event specialists, you typically compete in world championships, but this is the first and last Olympics that you compete as an event specialist in the Olympics. I was sitting there trying to make this choice, but this is a really big deal. This is like still so cool to me that this is how it all ended up unfolding. I was trying to decide, do I continue down the path of building my business? I've created momentum as an entrepreneur. If I go back to sport, am I going to lose all of these things that I worked really hard for? Am I going to slow the progress of my business? Are people going to think as a businessman, I'm not serious because I decided to do sport again? Other insecurities that popped up. Are people in sport going to think that I'm unhappy with the path that I chose and I'm trying to come back to grab on to some potential to make my life feel complete? That was such a big insecurity for me that I was going to look that way, that like, oh, look at this guy. Like, he didn't get enough the first time. He's unhappy. So he needs to come back and try to get more. That was something that was really hard for me to overcome. But ultimately I sat with myself and I said, what do I want to do right now? Like genuinely, what's the most exciting, fun way for me to spend the next year? I can continue to build my business. That's great. Or I could just like try to become an athlete again. I was like, I'm going to try to become an athlete again. And I'm not going to focus on building my business at all. And at the age of 32, I'm going to go back into high level athletics, compete with people that are 8 years younger than me and all that good stuff. And it was such a hard, wild ride. In order to qualify into the competing system, I had to do a routine in my gym, get judged virtually, and get a score that was equivalent to the top 8 in the world. I hadn't even done gymnastics in 4 years. So I started hitting it hard and I started training 7 days a week and I was all the way back in and I had to do that routine at month 5. So I did that routine at month 5 and got that score. I got a score equivalent to 4th in the world at month 5. And I was completely blown away. It was like this crazy ride. I was like, I'm going to pull this off. And then I started getting all this support from other coaches like, hey, you're going to be the Olympic representative. It's so weird you came back, but you can still do it, all this stuff. So I went to the US Championships and that was my first competition back in 5 years. And I had a pretty mediocre showing. I thought it was going to be enough for them to pull me through to Olympic trials. I was kind of working out the kinks. And I thought it was all good. And ultimately, that was my first and then last competition. Didn't qualify for the Olympic trials. So obviously couldn't go to the Olympic Games. So it was this entire comeback to compete one time, not do my entire business for 1 year. And then after that one time, go immediately back into retirement. So it was such a wild journey, but this is my whole takeaway. Worth it. So worth it. Because the lessons that I learned and the lesson that I learned of following my energy and following that alignment, my business did better the year that I didn't build it. And now I'm in a position that's, I don't know, 4 or 5 levels, however you'd consider level, further beyond than I think it would have been if I would have just stuck to the normal path of business. So it's so crazy for me to watch that. I'm so happy I got to learn this. I took my foot off the gas of how I was driving my business in the past. I focused on me and the result was more business, more happiness, more everything. So yeah, that was the entire experience. Probably one of the most powerful experiences I've ever had in my entire life. So very lucky.
And the reason I love this story specifically is that there were all those insecurities and all those thoughts around what are other people going to think? What about my business? And at the end of the day, again, going back to knowing who you are and knowing what you want, and then actually executing on that, you said, I'm going to go back to sport. You did it. And then it didn't work out.
Right.
And I think this is kind of the story that no one tells, right? This is the thing that you try really hard for, it doesn't work, and then you kind of sleep, like you kind of push it under the rug. And in your case, this was your mindset around it is this is such a beautiful lesson. This wasn't a failure. Mm-hmm. And so I want to talk about the difference really quickly there between when you try really hard and it doesn't work out and you don't succeed and you don't make the team or the business fails.
Mm-hmm.
How do you shift that to where it's like,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, I'm curious, like what your mindset is on that.
Yeah. They're not failures until you quit. And I know that people say that a lot, but it's all just information building us into the version of ourselves that is going to be ready to accept the win. If we didn't get it that time, the version of ourselves that we were being just wasn't equivalent. It wasn't equal to the person that receives that win. It's all just a building block and information aggregating and sculpting who you are. And one day you will be ready. And that's how I look at all of this stuff. It's just like, huh, let's juice all of that for all the lessons and get up and do it on the next thing. And we just keep moving forward, not from a place like you can do it, pick yourself up. It's all from a place of, again, optimism, neutrality, and curiosity. Like, wow, what an experience. It's built me into a different machine. I'm so excited to see how now when this machine interacts with the world, what's going to unfold from a result.
Right.
So I think if we can live like that forever, we're going to be experiencing infinite joy and we literally can't lose. You literally can't lose because you never look at things as a loss. So we've kind of cracked the code to happiness and success. And then when you're in that energy, undeniably, you'll accomplish more than anybody else that's in scarcity energy. And again, that's abundance mindset again.
Yeah. And acting out of fear. And just to kind of zero in on what neutrality means, it's not positive. It's not negative. It just is. And so how do you take what is and learn from what is instead of trying to categorize it into a box and just realize that this is what is for you. And then how do you move forward from that? I think when you can take off the good and the bad, then it lowers the stakes and the pressure again. So before we jump into Q&A, I want to do like rapid fire info on your real estate business. First off, why real estate?
I, for some reason, am just energetically driven to do real estate. I find it very interesting to find good deals, like diamonds in the rough. And then that's exciting. It's really fast paced and it just aligns with who I am. Fundamentally, I oddly understand it really well, just intuitively.
Okay. That's like very, very easy. You're just drawn to it.
Yeah. Like I just get it for some reason.
And so what was the first big deal that you did? Like how many properties do you own now? I know that you mm-hmm. recently sold a bunch of renter and now you're getting more into commercial. So I'm curious, like that first big, big, big deal that kind of really impacted your portfolio in terms of revenue and asset wise. I'm curious what that was for you.
Yeah. So there was really no one huge deal. I was doing like probably similar size deals throughout, but the big time period was that I came here and I bought 9 deals in 1 year. That was like a big year. Right now we're about to sell probably the last 40 properties that I have. And then we're going to start to move into commercial. So that's where we're at now. The really cool thing was that, and the reason why I found real estate very, very interesting is that we were able to amplify equity very quickly. Real estate creates cash flow. So it puts money in your pocket. And then also it creates value and increase in equity. So yeah, that was a big year for me. I started to understand process of, I won't get into the details too much, but of acquisition, of turning a property and making it more valuable creatively. How do I get more net profit from this asset? And net profit equals more value. And then how do I, the disposition side, how do I get rid of the property? So learning that in that year, and then I was like, I can do any deal.
And so you're in Columbus, Ohio too.
Yes.
And why Columbus in terms of investing in real estate and buying homes? And were you buying homes, renovating them and then selling them? Or were you buying homes, maybe putting a little bit of reno in it and then actually turning it into a rental property mm-hmm. or both?
Yes. Some of both. Okay. But typically the strategy, buying homes, renovating them and putting a renter in. The reason why Columbus is because the quality of life versus the cost of living is a favorable ratio right here. And the supply and the demand for housing is also a very favorable ratio. So the cash flow that you get from Columbus real estate is great. What that means is you have an asset after you pay all of your expenses at the end of the month, you have positive cash flow as your salary or dividend on the payout on that asset. The cash flow in Columbus is better than anywhere I've seen in the entire United States. And then the potential for increase in equity and value is also at the top that I've seen in the United States. Pair that with the fact that I've been here for 10 years. I understand the market and I know a lot of people. It's just an absolute no-brainer.
So when you're transitioning from kind of residential real estate to mm-hmm. more commercial and commercial yep. real estate versus residential, a person is paying you to live in it or yep. they're paying you to live in it. Like they're buying the house or they're renting it from you. And then commercial real estate, it is a business. A business is paying you to rent the space or lease the space. It's just very different. I'm curious the shift towards commercial real estate for you. What was that shift of, I want to be in residential. Okay. Now I kind of am interested in commercial real estate.
Yes. So I'll give you the one thought behind this, and this is so good for everybody that's listening. So what I realized is real estate is the same, whether you buy a $100,000 property or a $100 million property. It's exactly the same. It's actually easier if you buy a $100 million property. People that are successful in real estate, they just understand what I just said, and they have the confidence and the support from their work and study to go do the $100 million property. There's no difference. And that's it. That's the whole reason why I shifted. I said I could spend 6 months making this much money, or I could spend 6 months making money with 2 zeros behind it. And it's the same exact amount of work. It's actually easier when you're doing bigger deals because you're dealing with people that do big deals, which are generally people that are executing on a higher level. And it's the exact same thing. And I mentor a lot of people, not a lot, but I spend my time mentoring people here in real estate. And I just see them, they're like, well, I want to do this like one thing first, and then I want to do this, and then I want to do this. And there's two things to think about. First, is that actually true from your skill set standpoint? If it is, develop that skill set. Or is this just, again, scarcity mindset and fear? And 90% of the time, it's just scarcity mindset and fear. So I'm shifting to bigger deals because they're the same amount of time out of me and energy. And they're actually easier.
That's so interesting, like the mindset shift there.
Crazy. And
that's amazing. Okay. I want to shift over to Q&A because we have about 14, 15 minutes. I feel like we could talk for a very long time and go very deep
forever,
all the different directions.
I know.
I want to focus on the questions that the students have asked. And so there were actually a lot of questions around your life outside of gymnastics and business and how you balanced you know, your gymnastics career, now your real estate career, as well as, you know, running a few online businesses and like the life part of life?
Yes. Good question. I don't look at it as balance. I look at it as harmony. So again, abundance mindset. I only do business because I love business. I only did gymnastics because I love gymnastics. And I genuinely try to only do things that I love. If it's an energy suck or an energy drain, I try to not follow it. So business and sport and fun and relationships and all these other things are just harmoniously circulating within my life. So I sit with myself and I pay attention. Am I spending a little bit too much time engaged in business? Do I need a little more connection? And I try to be present about that feeling. I would definitely shift the thinking to this is harmony instead of balance.
Because balance means that everything in life is equally weighted at one time.
Right.
Because you view it as harmony. I view it as integration. Like how am I integrating these important parts of my life, but nothing is ever like balanced. But then it like gives you something honestly unrealistic to try to achieve is this balance idea. Okay. The next question is, what was your initial thought when you didn't make it to the Olympic trials? Like your first thought, and how long did it take you to view it as you do now?
So for context, I've been doing a lot of this work, and this was just 3 months ago. So I wanted to preface that. But my initial thought was, wow, I didn't make it. Interesting. Genuinely interesting. I wonder what this leads to, or I wonder why. Mm. Wow, I can't believe I didn't make it. I wonder why this was the outcome of this past year. And genuinely, it was like that within like 30 to 60 seconds, because I do a lot of this work. To frame that, often though, for me personally, it's like, damn it, I'm casting blame on somebody else, or I am disappointed in myself. You can absolutely get into those rhythms and then shift into that curiosity. But I was curious from the get. I went into this whole thing curious. So I was able to get curious quickly.
Curious quickly. I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
Paige from Effingham County CEO asks, what do you feel like was the lowest point of your life and your highest? So lowest and highest. And then for the lowest, how did you bounce back?
Lowest point of my life was a time where I was being an entrepreneur and I was telling myself that you just have to accomplish X. And then once you get to X, it'll be okay. That was the lowest point of my life for sure. Because I was so beat down into the ground, so beat down that I was like crawling. And I want to frame what we're saying. It was me not enjoying the moment, not following my energy, not getting into this place where I have this full cup and I'm overflowing into all these beautiful things I'm creating in my life. I wasn't curious. I wasn't neutral. I wasn't optimistic. I was in a mindset of, this is really hard. It's going to be really hard. You need to suck it up. You need to just force yourself to do this thing that you hate no matter what. Because if you can get to this place, you'll be happy. And that was the hardest time in my life. It was insane. Because I was saying, this how it has to be for the rest of my life. This is impossible. So that was the lowest for sure. Realized I was completely unsustainable and I was never going to get to where I wanted to go anyways, because I was not competitive in the marketplace in that energy, period.
How did you bounce back from that?
I literally realized that if I had to live that way, that I would not survive as a human being in that energy. I felt like I would die. I was deteriorating physically, everything. So the way that I bounce back is I step back from it and I said, let me get some space. Let me understand my energy and alignment more and let me see what truly aligned with me. And then I started following that alignment and it's just given me literally 50x the energy that I had during that time.
And then your highest point in life?
Highest point in life is probably sometime around now. But again, coming off this ride of 1 year, just following my heart, letting go of like needing to keep doing business. And it's now fully and wholeheartedly believing that as long as I follow what's rightly aligned for me, as long as I follow that, I'll have everything I need in life. And just waking up every day and saying, I'm fully committed to that idea and not doing things that drain me. Yeah, I think that's what's made this the best time in my life.
That's amazing. Okay, another question. What is the coolest experience that you had while traveling? Whenever you were on the USA team and Olympics and all of that, like curious, living in Olympic Village, the Olympic Training Center, what was your coolest experience?
So many. I'm smiling because I'm thinking like, oh my goodness. I went all over Europe, China, Japan, South Korea, Indonesia, Australia, Brazil. I went so many different places. My coolest experiences, I got to live in the Olympic Training Center where we eat and live and train all within like 1,000 feet of each other. And you're living in there with other Olympians, and the qualification to get in there is they say within the top five in the world. So you're just like living in this like fenced in area with other athletes from different sports. It's definitely any kind of experiences I had with my friends, being in really high pressured situations and really unique situations with your brothers is a very interesting moment. And the bonds that you form are completely unbreakable for life. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I could boil it down to like one thing, but it was definitely times where we would be in the Netherlands and just like having lunch in this cool cafe in the Netherlands as a relative, you know, youngster, looking at each other saying like, how do we land here in life? Like, how did this happen? And we're just like laughing and joking around and running through the streets and all that.
That's amazing. I love hearing that. Okay, next question. So you found your passion really early on in life. Mm-hmm. And so Callie or Kaylee, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. She asked, what do you think your key is to finding your passion if you didn't find it when you're young? And if you're trying to discover that right now, how do I know what that is and what direction to go?
This is very good. Please listen. Action. So by taking action, you'll learn what your passion is. If you just sit in a chair and try to pick the perfect path from the get and then run down that path for the next 3 years, you will die. So just take action. So
not actually your passion, die, but yeah.
Yeah. Emotionally. But your path doesn't look like this. It looks like this, then this, then maybe this, then this, then this, then this. But eventually you're still going in the right direction. And when you take action, you get experience. When you get experiences, you know what you like and you know what you don't like. And it's the best thing to do. So if you're sitting there and you feel like what you're doing is unaligned, continue to learn and dissect why it's unaligned. And then you just make a more informed choice tomorrow. It is crippling for many people to sit there and say, is this the right thing or is that the right thing? Or is this the right thing or is that the right thing? Then it gets back into scarcity mindset. Take action, be curious about how what I'm learning is going to more correctly direct me to where I want to go, and just keep having that curious mindset around that action.
I love that. And think about how many businesses or dreams were never acted upon or never started because of overthinking, right?
It's overthinking. The whole problem.
And like action is also experimenting. Like you're experimenting and trying new things. And when you can frame it as an experiment, it's like this could go well or this could not go well, but either way, I'm going to learn something. That's super powerful.
Yeah.
Okay. How did you personally brand your real estate business and make it different from other companies?
Yes. So good question. You know, in real estate where you really niche down and you start to work on certain kinds of assets, I followed what was more aligned with me. And I can be more specific about what that means. Like just in the world, in any industry, but in real estate specifically, you have luxury products and you have necessity products. Is how I look at the spectrum. What works really well for me is necessity products, because I like being confident that the assets or the things that I'm providing are something that are a necessity for people to have a certain quality of life. For me, the reliability of revenue in that scenario is really comforting. So that's what I did. So what I typically do is I'm in extremely low or low income housing. So I'm providing housing for families that are in a financial situation where that's a thing that they really need and a thing that they can't always get. I like that. I like it from an alignment standpoint. And then I also like it from a business standpoint. So to answer the question more broadly, again, picking what feels aligned with me, comfortable with me, and seeing what I gravitate towards, and just pulling on that and following that path.
Great. Love that. What advice would you give someone who wants to get into real estate, even at a younger age? And do you recommend them go to college to learn, or is there any kind of licenses or certification that's involved? Like what's kind of the more nitty gritty of getting into being a real estate investor?
Here's the nitty gritty. And I wish people would take this advice more, because I give it to a lot of people. Nobody wants to do it. Go find somebody that's doing what you would like to be doing in 5 or 10 years and work for them for free. That's just always the answer. And do a really, really good job and learn and learn and learn. And approach real estate in asking yourself the question, how can I provide the most amount of value for this person? How can I provide the most amount of value, make the most amount of money for this person? And then I'm getting a piece of that money or getting lessons, and then I can go do what I want to do. It's just so good. Unfortunately, nowadays, people don't want to do that. What you will learn from working from somebody that has $1 billion worth of assets is so incredibly invaluable. So that would be my number one go-to. Go to college, do what you want to do from a a total development standpoint, but go work for the person that's doing what you want in 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. Cause that's definitely going to be a different kind of education for sure.
Yeah.
And then in terms of being a real estate investor, just to clarify, you do not need any kind of certification. You do not need to have any kind of license. What you have to have is money, right? You have to have some kind of seed money to invest in that first property. But other than that, that's the beautiful thing about getting into real estate is you don't necessarily have to have a degree. You don't necessarily have to have a license, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Don't have to have a degree. Don't have to have a license. And there is a way, there's ways to learn real estate investing as well without having that money by being an active, not to get too specific, but an active wholesaler. So there's always ways. Get involved early, get with somebody that's doing what you want to do.
Yes, I completely agree. Who would you say now is one of your biggest supporters?
Definitely my mom. Definitely my mom. She's, yeah.
I'll say it twice. Like, definitely my mom.
Yes. Biggest supporter. But again, same idea. Like whatever you want to do, let's do it. I'm like supporting you and who you want to become. That's so freeing for me to be completely creative and run around this world doing what I feel like doing.
I have one more question just because we're right at the top of the hour. So I want to thank you again for your time and your vulnerability.
So much fun.
And sharing like all the deep elements of, you know, success, learning from all the different elements of your career. And so my last question from Peyton, such a good question, Peyton from Union County. Do you feel like you've made it or do you think you're only going up from here?
I'm definitely only going up from here forever. And I feel like I've made it. So I feel like I have everything I need. Yeah. I feel like I absolutely have everything I need. And I'm so excited to see what else will unfold for me in this lifetime. And I try to just live in that energy every single day.
I love that. My last question is about your discipline. And we talked a lot about mindset, but also there's the action and the discipline of showing up for yourself and your business every day.
Yeah.
What has that discipline looked like over time? And what does it look like now?
Yes. So over time and now, I have been what people would consider to be pretty disciplined, kind of the way that I operate my life. The way that I can be disciplined, I think, is by understanding and really feeling that we just have this beautiful blue sky of an opportunity of experiences in this life. And why not give ourselves the best chance to have the most potent, unique, fun experiences? And the way that we do that is by sharpening ourselves into the being that is ready to receive those experiences. And that generally comes with a subset of actions that sharpen us into becoming that asset that's ready to receive, that vessel is the better word, ready to receive those experiences. So that's the way that I look at discipline. When I don't want to do the thing that I know that I should do to help me become that vessel, I just go, but don't you want to see where this goes at the highest level? Don't you want to see what it tastes like to be another level above what you were before? And I'm like, definitely. I'm like, I'm really excited to see what that's like. So then I'm like, come on, man. Like, let's just go. Let's just keep doing what we're doing because this is real fun.
That's amazing. Ah, thank you so, so, so much. I'm so thankful for you and our friendship. And also
thank you.
Just sharing with the CEO students from all over the Midwest about your story. And also, students, thank you so much for being so engaged in the chat. Your questions were amazing. So, Brandon, thank you so much. And everyone else, I'm so appreciative for you. And I'll see you guys next month.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If any of the topics of this conversation resonated, share it with a friend, leave a rating or review, or subscribe to find out when future episodes drop. And if you want to learn more about how the CEO program's transformational experience changes lives of students and communities all across the country, visit discoverceo.com.